Our scripture for today is also printed in your bulletin if you would like to read along as I read it. Psalm 8, and the version we're using today is the Message version, though it is printed in the bulletin in two versions, in case one is your favorite above the other. God, brilliant Lord, yours is a household name. Nursing infants gurgle choruses about you. Toddlers shout the songs that drown our enemy talk and silence atheist babble. I look up at your macro skies, dark and enormous, your handmade sky jewelry, moon and stars mounted in their settings. Then I look at my micro self and wonder, why do you bother with us? Why take a second look our way? Yet we've so narrowly missed being gods, bright with Eden's dawn light. You put us in charge of your handcrafted world, repeated to us your Genesis charge, made us lords of sheep and cattle, even animals out in the wild, birds flying and fish swimming, whales singing in the ocean deeps. God, brilliant Lord, your name echoes around the world. The word of God. Thanks be to God.
I hope today for our few minutes together that we can really, with our imagination, go to some very faraway places. First, would you imagine with me being on the Scottish island of Iona with a group of us from Central who had a chance to go on a spiritual pilgrimage there last September? It was our last night there on a dark night. Tom, let's bring up that image of Iona. This image shows a little cloudy, but the last night that we were on the island, it was open sky. You could see just some traces of the Milky Way and all its dense splendor. We were feeling, really kind of the gravity of being there our last night. Who knows if we're going to be able to come to this very holy place again, this island in the Hebrides. So we decided to take a walk in the dark, just not even with flashlights, just trusting our eyes would acclimate, and we went up a hill to the ruins of this ancient convent that's been there since the Middle Ages. And no one was speaking, just kind of a real reverent, quiet kind of thing for us to do as a group. And just then, a shooting star, or more accurately, a meteor, shot across the sky, and all of us standing there broke our silence with, "Whoa." I want to know, has anyone here ever seen a meteor flash across the sky and had your own kind of whoa moment? Yeah. Now I want you in your imagination to think of lying down on a different hillside, this time 3,000 years ago. Maybe you're lying somewhere in Mesopotamia, or maybe it's the Indus River Valley, Fertile Crescent. You've never seen, or would you even know what you're talking about if someone mentioned an electric light bulb to you? Cell phones would be the stuff of weird dreams. You never would have seen a tractor plow a field. What we think of as machinery would have been very foreign to you. And there you are, lying in a field, looking up at the heavens, and a meteor shoots across the sky. What might you think in that moment? Some same constellations as now. I think that's part of what is amazing about gazing at stars, is you really are looking at the same movement and collection of stars from our perspective that people would have seen millennia and millennia ago. Our ancestors way back in that day thought of this sky as powerful and overwhelming and kind of ominous and scary. Maybe it's easy for you to put yourself in the shoes or the sandals of an Egyptian or someone in Palestine way back then. They might have thought of it being capricious gods like the Greeks who were ruling the sky, and you had to be careful or they might do something to you. Maybe that meteor, that shooting a star I saw, maybe it's a good sign, maybe it's a bad sign. You would have been filled with superstition. Ours is a creator God. is what we're here to talk about today. A creative God, from the first mover and setting the stars in play. And we're going to take apart this beautiful psalm and wonder what was being meant by its words. This creator God, the God of dirt and water and all the prime elements that have ever been. But today we're taking a look at God, the creative one, who crafts the cosmos and is even further out than the Hubble telescope can see, but is somehow able to be as near as our breath. It's those huge existential questions that we get to wonder together today. How can our God be both? I remember being a boy when thunderstorms would brew up over our neighborhood in East Tennessee. And my mother was very afraid of lightning and thunder. I remember some of my early memories of maybe a spring thunderclapper was coming on. And she would gather all of us, her sons, into her bedroom for safety. And I was thinking later that so that oak tree that she was afraid would fall on the house, it would kill all of us at once, was kind of, I guess, what would play out. But she was very afraid, and I think a couple of us kind of picked up on that anxiety, what's going to happen when it thunders. So my brother, I remember telling me one day of, oh, that the thunder, it's just the god Thor who's throwing his lightning bolts down at another god as they're getting to a big wrestle match. I thought to myself then, wow, I hope I never meet that guy. Well, the Bible's authors, when you think about the Greek, Mesopotamians, when it comes time for the Old Testament to be written, those authors and poets had a different view. They brought something else to the idea of what is going on when you look up at the sky. They did not believe there was a battle going on up in the sky between gods. There was no war. There was no sun that was a divine god up there. Nor were the thunder clouds really sky gods and goddesses either coalescing or in battle. No. They thought that whatever heavenly phenomena you saw up there were finite happenings representing an infinite God who was behind it all. The Creator for the Hebrews was greater than anything that was happening in the sky that you could see. Now, it was kind of a leap forward to see, appreciate something is not cause and effect, that some temporal, capricious God is having a mood swing, but rather God is simply allowing the heavens to be. Now remember Psalm 8, you heard Diana read a moment ago. It describes a God more as a poet would than a scientist would. Describes a God who sets in motion sun and moon with divine fingers. I like how some philosophers refer to God as the prime mover. That maybe God is not manipulating stars and movement of heavenly beings now in real time, but maybe God was more the one who set it in motion in the first place and allowed trajectories to take form and evolution to take place as the prime mover. And then there's the first chapter of Genesis where it talks about God saw nothing and whispered words into it and changed nothing into something. Well, are these stories of God as creator just sort of ancient myths that we don't put any real credence on anymore? We modern people often no longer see a mystery to the sky because we've got the Hubble telescope and we've got meteorologists that tell us what exactly causes a storm front to come into being. I'm afraid that like with so many things, as we've increased in information, we've lost some of the mystery of what it means to be a creature in the universe. We can fly a jet at 30,000 feet and look down and think, oh yeah, there's a thunderstorm happening down there. I have mastery over it. It doesn't have mastery over me. We no longer think Thor or Jupiter are going to frighten us. And some of that, I'm glad, has happened. And yet, look at what the sky has delivered to us this morning and yesterday. Perhaps not brought to us by Zeus or Jupiter. It's just an icy weather system that's been brewing, and many of us have been following it on our weather apps on our cell phones for the last couple of days. But what does come from the sky is the reminder that we don't dictate the weather. We're really not in charge of everything. Just ask the bride whose wedding was here yesterday afternoon. You know, a while back, National Geographic had a magazine where it featured, Thomas, bring that up, it featured an image of celestial sky with happenings around the globe, and it had this bold question, are we alone? And it wasn't able to really fully answer, of course, conclusively with that in the article, but it posited how it does seem there is an argument for planets and systems and other galaxies that come close to some of the oxygen-producing elements of a planet Earth. It could be. There could be life in another form, in another place. The writer of Psalm 8 stands under the same sky that you and I stand under on a clear night. And that writer doesn't ask, are there other creatures out there, but rather asks another just as relevant question, who are we humans? Why would a creator do this and still pay attention to us? In the former, another translation, it says it this way, when I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you've established, what are human beings that you are mindful of us, mortals, that you would even care for us? The biblical record makes an argument that God is the Alpha and the Omega. God was before time, and God will be with us when everything we know of time has wound down. But for these few moments we're together, I want to look at that Alpha question. What was at the beginning? A fancy word for that is cosmology, which means the study of first things. How it got started. The beginning of all things is really quite puzzling to the greatest minds among us, the great astrophysicists and others. Thomas, bring up that other image there. Thinking about the initial conditions of what it might have been like near what is called the Big Bang. And I want to tell you a couple things. I was interested. Now, I know this sermon today maybe is a little geeky with a little, you know, theorems and ideas, but I just get very excited about this, and it really does rub up against our faith, I believe. The initial conditions at the time when the Big Bang banged has simply flabbergasted genius who think about this. There seems to have been a beginning to time, so the theories go, that there would have been a time when Chronos time as we know it was at zero. In a curious way, it looks like conditions way, way, way back in early universe were finely tuned so that here on Earth, life would eventually come into existence. This fine-tuning that everything seemed to align to allow evolution to happen as it's happened is called the anthropic principle. Now, I want you to learn this phrase. You know, I want you to walk away from church. This is your bonus for having come out in the snow and ice this morning. You're going to know a couple of phrases and really impress your friends. The anthropic principle. According to it, the initial conditions were such that intelligent life would eventually evolve. It appears that in the early universe, it prepared physics, prepared for there being an evolving biology. And the evolving biology would set in motion conditions that were favorable for sentient, intelligent, reflective life to be among some species. Try this for an example. Did you know that if gravity had been stronger or weaker, by just one part in 10 to the 30th power, then life-sustaining stars like the sun could not have existed. That would have meant life would have been impossible to have evolved from our sun and our small solar system. I tried this one out. If the initial explosion of the Big Bang had differed in strength by as little as one part in 10 to the 66th power, the universe would have either imploded upon itself or expanded too rapidly for stars to be born as we know them. How mind-boggling is that? There are so many ways in which this moment, this terrestrial sphere, you and me would not have been. In any case, all the accidentals that seem to come together, these accidents, if you will, or these convenient coincidences, go on and on and on as you hear people who are the brightest minds in the world talk about what might have been had it been differently. And these facts stun our scientists. One scientist, Owen Gingrich, is not only an astrophysicist but also a person of faith. He's in the astronomy department at Harvard. He sees the fingers of God at work out there in that cosmos. I love this quote. Listen to this. Dr. Gingrich says, "I accept that the physical constants have been fine-tuned to make intelligent life in the universe possible, and that this is evidence for the planning and intentions of a creator God. It's possible to know all these theories and to still have a sense that God was favorable toward us in life. It is not just us here." So instead of lying on a hill looking at the sky, I long to do that. It's been a long, cloudy stretch around here, though, hasn't it? Instead of lying on a hill looking at stars, we have other ways we can see it now as modern people, looking through telescopes or monitors or computer graphs. Thank you, Tom. Let's advance one more there. Yeah, what we see as we look at the sky is just as marvelous and awesome as what our ancestors saw. Now, our ancestors didn't get to see that. That is thanks be to Hubble Telescope and other modern telescopes. And I'm told this is a star birthing area of the universe. And the span across what we see there is more than 100 light years. How they capture that, I do not know. We see things our ancestors didn't. But just like them, we can say, sometimes moved beyond language. No wonder it was a poet who wrote what we're looking at today, because it begs for something more elegant than a scientific theory. The universe is as intricate as it is massive. It's as mysterious as it is visible, even with the Hubble. Today, though, we get to realize something that the psalmist missed. He or she never could have known. It's that not merely is the sun and moon moved by God's fingers. God's fingers lit the fuse of the Big Bang, hurling galaxies upon galaxies through the cosmos, opening up spaces. It's believed that when the Big Bang had its explosion, that it sent matter outward, and it is still sending it outward. The universe is still expanding to this day. Asteroids and comets and black holes and cosmic background radiation and dark energy, perhaps even Earth-like exoplanets, all belong to God's dynamic and changing creation that we get to be a part of. But the psalmist did make another point. If you walk through it again and look, it did make another point that is still true. That is, how regardless of how large our cosmos is, can't be measured with anything we would measure it with, God still loves you and me intimately, eternally. The God who thinks in terms of light years is still capable of loving you and me in a way one of the other psalms says, to the point that the number of hairs are known, but to our God of what is on us. Sit with that beautiful both and reality. I really believe, brothers and sisters, that we're to sit pondering such beauty in our life. Because to be able to let ourselves come to moments of awe in the presence of that information puts us in a spiritually healthy place. It puts us in a right place in the universe, not thinking ourselves larger than ourselves or smaller than ourselves. It sees us as part of God's great orchestration among so many other movements that God is doing. God does all that, and God is still concerned with my heart and soul as God is with yours. It's part of the reason, as much as I can in worship life and when I pray myself or write in my journal, I try not to refer to God as a he, not as a he or a she, because the God who can create galaxies is something greater than gender, is full of mystery. The longer I attempt to know and follow this God, the more mystery comes in, and I find that a wonderful thing. Martin Luther, remember the name? We've talked about Martin Luther a few times this year because some of his great work starting the Protestant Reformation as we know it started 500 years ago from this year. When Martin Luther was trying to say, you know, it's not the Pope and priests and the organized church that ought to dictate everything about your spiritual life, he tried to put things in people's hands, like for them to read their own Bible. And one thing he did was creating what was called the Small Catechism. It was like a creed of faith that if people could just learn this and read it and reflect on it, they would be able to be their own theologians. The opening line of the Small Catechism, I actually learned some of it as a child and a young adult and a confirmand, more calling it the Apostles' Creed. Anybody in the house grow up learning this line? I believe in God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. Yeah. When Luther was asked, what exactly do you mean by that? He said, this is his quote, I believe that God has created me together with all that exists. Now that might sound a little arrogant to put me prior to all that exists, but think again. God is both beyond and God is intimate. God is both cosmic and personal, so that I can tell God my thoughts and God already knows them. Regardless of how big the cosmos, God is fully and without exception present at the depth of your soul and my soul. Or as St. Augustine said, God is closer to me than I am to myself. So walking away today, what do we do with this psalm? Walking away today, may we be in awe on a regular basis. And it takes some work. Do you know, being in awe is not the same as being entertained? And I think that we've sometimes substituted one for the other. I don't know if you agree. I think awe more often happens when I on purpose slow down, I unplug, and I put myself in the natural world. Oh, how lucky we are in Michigan. We maybe think spring is coming a little late, but there's a lot of beauty happening right now. But we have all the unfurling and greening of the earth to look forward to that's going to happen any day now. So I say, take off your shoes and walk barefooted in the grass once the snow is gone. Get your hands dirty in the garden once the snow is gone. Give thanks for the water you and I get to drink every day. Pick up trash. Recycle. Work on cleaning up a watershed. Let the stars dazzle you. The next clear night it is, get out there and spend 15 minutes in silence. Rejoice that right now in this moment, you and I get to breathe air into our lungs that has been specially designed to renew our cells and give oxygen to our brains. Oh, our cosmos is so very big. But God's love is just as big, and that's the good news here today. God is valuing each and every creature, including you and me, directly and eternally, including, I might add, extraterrestrials, should they be out there, part of God's creation as well. So in case we haven't noticed yet, our God must do a whole lot of loving to cover all those bases. So what else can we say at a moment like this? But, O Lord, our Sovereign, how majestic is your name in all the earth. Amen.